Hello, everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with John, engineering and producing the program. Tuesday, September 26, 2023. John, if we hit 104, it'll be another record. Hey, what else is new after the summer of, I won't even say it. It's a four-letter word. It's been a tough summer, I'll tell you that. It's Buckmaster in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, the radio station we work at and provide you with information and talk. 1030 KVOI, Tucson's trusted source for news and talk. We have our worldwide live listening on my website, buckmastershow.com, which is also the place for all of our programs that are conveniently available for you and archived so you can listen on the podcast. For our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Let's get started now. Terry Bracey with us, our expert on Washington and governmental affairs from the nation's capital. Terry has had a unique role in representing Tucson's interests, beginning with a 10-year stint on the staff of the famed Congressman Morris K. Udall. Terry was then appointed to a sub-cabinet position by President Carter, subsequently served under four presidents of both parties. He's the founding partner of the respected public affairs firm Bracey Tucker Brown, which has worked on many of Tucson's successes in the nation's capital. You can look for Terry's op-ed pieces. He is a regular contributor to the Arizona Daily Star. Hello, Terry. How are you?
Hey, Bill. How are you?
Trying to hang in there.
Boy, I tell you, we were so sad to hear about Ann, who is just a world-class person.
Mm-hmm.
And I know how close you two were all through life. And from the University of Arizona on and on. Kind of like the marriage we have. And I don't know, Bill. It's really tough, and I hope you're doing okay.
Yeah, it's one of these really kind of, as I said at her burial on Saturday, Ann had a better chance of being hit by lightning than dying from this incredibly rare cancer. So it is what it is, and we have to move forward. Well, I hope they move forward in Washington, Terry, and come up with some kind of deal. But what are you hearing? What's your take on this?
Well, I think they've basically given up on getting an agreement. The one that actually the president and McCarthy agreed on to get the ball rolling. But now he's at war with a small group of extremists who are really running the show. People like, if you can believe it, like Matt Gaetz, Lauren Boebert, Andy Biggs of our state. How'd you like all those people making your crucial decisions about your family? Well, that's what they're doing. That's what they're doing. They are running the show, and it is really a tragedy. So I think what will happen is I think they'll maybe get an extension for weeks or a month to try to work it out further. But, you know, Bill, even if they do, what I'm hearing now from McCarthy is that he's willing to throw away a program as dear as the LIHEAP program, which provides subsidies for people in the winter months who are very poor. It provides for their heating. I mean, there are thousands and thousands of people all over the country who depend on this. Holy cow.
Why would you do something like that? Why would you do a cruel cut like that? I mean, this small group, we can blame them, I guess, for longer airport lines, hazardous drinking water, shuttered national parks, federal employees working but not getting paid. I'll tell you, it is just, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, everything has, you know, its roots, and the roots of all this occurred when the Republican Party decided that they needed a bigger group of support, that there weren't a majority of Republicans in the country, wealthy people, basically. and they had to reach out and bring in other groups. And the way they did it was they got in bed with the gun groups. They got in bed with the white, white nationalists, some of the worst groups in our society. And I think that they justified it in thinking that, well, we'll get their votes, but we won't really do what they want. Well, at the end of the day, after you do that for, 10, 15, 20 years, pretty soon, that constituency overtakes you. And right now we've got the inmates running the asylum, and this is what's happened. Terrible.
But did I hear you right? Do you think there would be a last minute, maybe extension of a couple of weeks? Did I hear that? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they're working on that right now. But, the problem is that the Senate wants money, even in a 30-day thing. We need money for the war. I mean, and things like that. And you've got three or four people, five people, whatever it is. They say, no. We want out of the Ukraine. We're going to run foreign policy now. So, I mean, it's like that. It's very difficult. How do you deal with dopes like this? There's really no way. I don't know what they're trying to achieve, and I don't think they know what they're trying to achieve except to enjoy all the publicity.
Well, if this happens, it won't be the first time. Let's see, the country has endured this would be the 22nd shutdown in the last five decades.
That's true. And there have been 2 or 3 day shutdowns, and there have been 2 month shutdowns. And this business all started with Newt Gingrich and his approach to the politics was, Newt said that politics is war, and sort of changed the tone of how things are done in Washington. He's had a very powerful influence on the changes that have occurred through the years. Very smart guy, but I've never really understood what he was trying to do. He certainly has been destructive to the nation.
So what if some moderate Republicans just join with Democrats and just move forward that way?
Well, there's a way to do it. It's called a discharge petition. And what it is signatures on a document by a majority of the House, 218, which would then call on the speaker to bring the bill to the floor.
Mm-hmm.
And it would override everything else, and it would make it directly to the floor where they could have votes. However, I don't think that the Republicans would agree to that. I'm not 100% sure the Democrats would sign on to that kind of petition if it didn't include some rational stuff. And that's the problem. That's where we are. Fundamentally, when the two sides just don't agree on anything, basically, at this point, it's awfully hard to make any kind of agreement. But yes, Bill, you're smart. There is a way to do it, and it's called a discharge petition.
Chances, though, of that are remote, would you say?
Well, unless there's some real heroes left in the world. I haven't seen any lately, but you know what? I have to believe. Many of my friends are Republicans, and they're just kind of looking at their shoes. Silence in the face of something like this is really a terrible thing. You gotta step up.
Yep.
And I still believe in our system, and I still believe that they're a lot of really good people in the Republican Party. And I think they feel very trapped. But somebody, to get something done, somebody's going to have to step up.
All right. Terry Bracey, always a pleasure. We'll check with you down the road. Thanks, Terry.
All right, Bill. Get well.
Thank you very much. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Mona's for a wide variety of beautiful European-style breads and pastries. They're open right now for lunch. They open for breakfast 6:30 in the morning, and they do take Monday off, well-deserved. But check it out, their website, monasdanishbakery.com. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. Shelley Fishman is with me in studio, and a very emphatic thumbs down. We'll figure out, Shelley will tell us what's behind that big thumbs down right after our break. Be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Shelley Fishman is a financial consultant in private practice in Tucson, Arizona. The views expressed during this segment are his own and don't necessarily represent those of this station or of Bill Buckmaster Communications. Contact Shelley through buckmastershow.com or at shelleyfishman.com.
And I'd like to add, Shelley Fishman is a good guy, and he is with us in studio. Hello, Shelley.
Hi, Bill.
With that tone of voice, things must be looking rather dim.
We're having a gray day on the markets today.
Yeah, and is there any particular reason?
Oh, there are several. You know, we always talk about uncertainty being bad for the markets.
Oh, yeah.
But sometimes when uncertainty gives way to a negatively derived certainty, then things get even worse. And as you and Terry were talking earlier, it seems pretty clear that absent, you know, some sort of miracle, that the government will shut down. And when it does, that just It is so bad for business, so bad for the economy, that the markets are just reacting to that. There was also a conference board reevaluation of GDP growth and employment, and I think it was as late as last week, but somehow it's only getting reported on today. And they were taking a somewhat dimmer view of where the economy was going, which is in direct contradiction to what the Fed Open Market Committee said last week when they raised the forecasts for both employment and GDP growth for the rest of this year and also for next year. So who knows?
The Fed chair has remarked on the future of interest rates. And for Chairman Powell, how was that statement last week received?
Well, that's a great question. At first, it was kind of ho-hum, and people started to think about it. And the problem is what the chairman said was that, you know, we've kept interest rates down to essentially zero to help the economy climb out of the Great Recession. But those aren't normal interest rates, and we have to start thinking about normalizing interest rates. So what he's saying is that short-term or overnight interest rates, which is what the Fed controls, should really be in the 2 to 3% range rather than in the 0% range. Well, that's fine for him to say, but when people took a breath and started thinking about it, they said, wait a second, let's see, before the Great Recession, interest rates for car loans were in the 5 to 6% range, and mortgages were in the 4 to 7% range. And is that the normal that we need to begin to anticipate going forward? And I'm afraid the answer is yes.
So those benchmarks could be what we're looking at for the next couple of years.
It's the old normal. It's become returned to the new normal.
Exactly.
So we've gotten so spoiled by a decade or 12 years of essentially Fed largesse and stimulus that, you know, the Fed, you said, so why doesn't the Fed just say, well, let's go back to zero? The problem is when the Fed puts interest rates that low, they lose their only tool for helping the economy out. I mean, they can't give money away, so the only tool they have is to lower interest rates. But when lowering interest rates starts from zero, they got nowhere to go. So I can understand why the Fed would be very cautious about in good economic times, and you know, the economy is looking like. You know, it's going to be a very strong couple of years, that in those times they want to get back to something that gives them the leverages they need to guard against the bad times. I'm talking in circles, but that's kind of the way the thought process goes. And what we have now is some understanding, some people beginning to say, oh my gosh, so what's going to happen? We've got real estate market now that is reacting badly to the higher the higher rates. The rates for new construction and new home purchases are actually pretty good. But what we're seeing is resales are down because people don't want to give up their existing low mortgage rates and go to the next, you know, the next step in their housing project. So those rates are alarming for people. Car loan rates, which is at a time when car prices have been rising fairly steadily, that's a bad sign.
And we have a strike going on in the auto industry.
Well, yeah, right? that hasn't really hit yet, but it will
if it continues.
Absolutely.
If it continues with parts and
absolutely. So there's, you know, headwinds in the economy right now that I think is how we can explain what's happening over the past couple of days. I mean, the Dow is down in the 33,000s. I get alarmed, you know, when it's in the 34,000s. But it's getting very close to where we opened the year. And that's not good politically, but it's also not good for people who depend on investment growth being somewhat steady over you know, over the course of a long period of time. We'll recover from it. That's not a problem. But, you know, as we get past the summer and into the end of the year, we really do expect the market to surge a bit. And I'm just wondering that if so much is creating either continued uncertainty or some downward pressure and as the year comes to a close, that, you know, we're going to have some problems on the road ahead.
What are we down? What is the market year to date then on the Dow?
As of today?
Yeah.
It's probably up only 1 or 2%.
Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. The NASDAQ is still up. I'd have to run the numbers to tell you for sure. But we were nicely up at 35,000, you know, in the low 34,000s. It, you know, it becomes just, you know, we need a little more push for the year. And down into the 33s, you know, we're pushing where we started.
So corporate borrowers, the bigger people, will be okay with this normal rate range.
Well,
oh, wow,
yes.
And I just looked at these numbers. We're down now over 400 points.
Yeah, no, it's a bad day.
Oh, my goodness. Congress, let's not.
Really?
Can we please get act together
it
here?
It is not Congress's job to watch out for the stock market.
No.
However, it is Congress's job to participate in keeping the economy steady, and this doesn't do that.
Yeah.
You opened up another subject, which is really interesting for us, you know, corporate types. When corporations look to do a capital project, build a factory, you know, start a new venture, buy a corporation, they run the numbers both short-term, medium-term, and long-term on what their investment parameters would be. They call it hurdle rates for making that investment. Clearly, the cost of borrowing is one of the things that goes into that hurdle rate. So when they look to the income side of an investment, they're kind of neutral on what the interest rates would be, because they can usually adjust their expectations for what the revenue side of that venture would produce. And so long as the risk involved is, for instance, if I say I need a 12% return, and that's my corporate hurdle, but so I'll say, okay, fine, looks like we're going to get 15% out of this, but with a 60% chance of success and a 40% chance of failure, then I have to adjust that down. So, I mean, this is what corporate, you know, economists do for a living every day. Why they don't get blind, I don't know. But it's how corporations evaluate projects going forward. These kind of interest rates are not going to be worrisome for them. Now, if we get the kind of inflation we had in the 1970s, where they were looking at 18, 19% borrowing rates, that's a different story. But this is the difference between 2 and 4%. So that shouldn't be a factor here. Now, if you're an individual, not a corporation, and you're looking at the difference between a 3% mortgage and a 6% mortgage, that's something you have to factor in seriously.
Mm-hmm. What are home mortgage rates at roughly now?
You know, I'm seeing different numbers. Okay. They had peaked at over 7. I think you
7?
Yeah. I think that you could probably find a mortgage with good, you know, if you've got a good credit rating, you can probably find a mortgage for, you know, in the range of 5.5 to 6.
Still, that's pricing a lot of people out of the market.
Well, it's saying that if you are aware of what's going on, if you are a current mortgage holder and you want to step up to the next house, that you might say, well, maybe this is a time to wait.
Yeah.
And so that's what people are doing. The other thing is that, you know, people are rolling the dice, is they're looking at variable mortgages, thinking that, okay, you know, maybe what I can do is tolerate a 7% mortgage right now, because I know it's going to come back down.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, when Powell makes a statement like, you know, we're probably not going to return to 0% interest rates, then your variable mortgage becomes a less secure future bet.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there's a lot of things that if you're a family and you're trying to make decisions about your investments, about your, you know, the debt side of your financial picture, these things throw uncertainty into the game, and I think that's why the markets are a little depressed right now.
The markets are very forward-looking. We've talked about this before. It seems that today, this really very bad day on the markets, we've got pricing in going on of a shutdown. Isn't that
I believe it's mostly shut down.
Yes.
I think that corporate profits have shown tremendous resilience, and absent something that says corporations are not going to be able to do the kind of profitability that they've been doing, there's no reason to believe, again, looking forward, that the markets shouldn't be doing well.
All right, Shelley. Well, we will see what happens, and we will have you back with us on Tuesday. So until then, I hope the rest of your week goes well.
Got to be better than today.
Yeah, this is not a particularly great day. All right, we will take a break right here, back on the Buckmaster Show right after this.
CBS News Brief. President Biden spent hours with striking auto workers today in Detroit and applauded them for demanding more from automakers.
You deserve the significant raise you need and other benefits.
Let's get it!
Get back who we lost.
Former President Trump's due in Michigan tomorrow. Some Republicans refuse to work with House Speaker Kevin McCarthy on a spending compromise that could shut down the government. CBS's Jared Hill.
A group of hardline Republicans lobbying for deep spending cuts is pushing for a shutdown, emboldened by former President Trump, who posted on social media, "Unless you get everything, shut it down."
Hunter Biden suing Rudy Giuliani and his former lawyer for allegedly messing with data on his laptop. CBS's Graham Cates.
The lawsuit accuses them of spending an extraordinary amount of time and obsessing over the data. The lawsuit claims some of the data was tampered with, manipulated, and altered.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade, using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. The garden, well, this is the time of year, perfect time of year to get over to Green Things. 3384 East River Road, right by the Rito River, just west of the Brandy Fenton Park. They have a 13-acre site that is just loaded with everything that you could imagine for your garden. They also have their sister business, Zocalo Village, which has beautifully handcrafted dining room sets out of a variety of beautiful woods like mesquite, talavera pottery. Anyway, the two websites, greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com. They're open every day, and they're in their 53rd year of business over at Green Things. When we do our telephone interviews, our friends at Rincon Ventures, real estate and property management, sponsor our live line. But with us in studio is our friend, our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, longtime educator, former superintendent of the Flowing Wells School District, associate professor emeritus and associate dean at the University of Arizona College of Education, a former Arizona superintendent of the year. He's very active in the Tucson community, the Interfaith Community Service, known as Services, ICS. Is an organization that Bob Hendricks feels very strongly about, so much so that he serves on the board of directors. And Bob, first of all, great to see you. And I do want to give a plug for ICS because this is a great organization, 120 faith communities that serve more than 52,000 individuals each year, offering assistance when it comes to food hardship, job loss, financial crisis. You folks really do try to step up and help people.
We do, and there's a huge need out there, and it just never seems to go away. And so we're trying our best, as many other organizations that we partner with in Tucson, to help the community that's in need.
Are questions asked when someone has need, or how is there a vetting process?
There is.
Okay. There's
a central network for vetting, so
okay.
We look at financial statements and mm-hmm. so forth, but mm-hmm. we're never going to turn anyone away. But if we're going to get deeper into financial support, such as rent or utilities or something,
but
we're going to have
food assistance is
pretty open-ended.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about education right now. This book banning thing has really taken off across the country. Has it come to Arizona?
It has, and
we're actually looking at
a Senate bill that passed, 1700. It's moved on to the House now for further deliberation. My guess is it's going to pass the House as well. And it's going to be a pretty significant piece of legislation because it essentially says to parents, if you have an objection to any book, report that to the State Department of Education, not local school boards, interestingly enough, but
they would bypass the local boards.
Right.
That's a big change, isn't it?
Straight to the State Department of Education, and they will look at the formal complaint. And then unilaterally, based on this legislation, if it passes, the state board will decide whether this particular book gets on the banned banded list or not. And when we talk about a banded list, that would mean that that book would be excluded from any K-12 public school.
In the United States?
No, in Arizona. As well as any public library. It gets taken off the shelf. So there's a period of time for deliberation. During that time, that book is put in sort of a hold area, and then it's determined whether that book is going to be legitimate or not. And so it's really kind of an interesting issue, because as I read the piece of legislation as it's currently in its current state, there's really very little criteria for the State Department to look at. I mean, I don't know how they're going to do this, by the seat of their pants, or if they're going to develop a criteria or whatever. But the general idea of it is that if anything is considered to be sexual or lewd, then it's sort of an automatic consideration. But there are other broader topics as to what might be accepted or not. You know, a number of the states that have put bans in place have looked at cultural issues, mm-hmm. racism, mm-hmm. A number of gender issues, and then just in general, some really strange, and I'll talk a little bit about some of those books that have been banned in other states, but there is legislation already in the books in Georgia, in Florida, Missouri, Oklahoma, Tennessee, Texas, West Virginia, and Utah. So Arizona's, if this passes, is going to be joining that list of states that already have a book ban in place.
Can you tell us about some of the books?
Yeah, I can. Well, in some, and I can only refer to other states, but for example, the American Library Association cites that there are over 1,200 books currently under consideration across
that many?
The nation. Amazing. But some of the books that I'm going to give you titles of, Bill, you're going to recognize, because I'm sure you've read some of them, and I have as well.
Mm-hmm.
The Catcher in the Rye.
Wow.
A Diary of a Young Girl, Anne Frank.
Oh, my goodness.
To Kill a Mockingbird, The Color Purple. Now, these books that I mentioned have a bit of sexual innuendo in them, if you want to look for it. But then again, a lot of things do, if you want to look for it. And so this is a little bit, it's not a little bit. It's much of a gray area. And so the state department's going to have to decide. And if you remember, both of us were in a conversation with Superintendent Horn.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't sound like he was jumping at the opportunity to get involved in this exercise, but it looks like it's landed straight in his lap. So,
because he's talked before on the show that he's not in favor of banning books.
But he's going to get this assignment, whether he wants it or not, if the House, in fact, endorses this legislation and it passes.
Do you know what state has banned The Diary of Anne Frank? Did you look
at it? I don't.
Okay.
I don't, but I can tell you it's more than one.
Oh, my
goodness.
Where
the question has come up.
Isn't
as
that
to,
something?
the whole issue of her loneliness and her relationship with her parents and so forth. Again, one can read anything they want into these situations if they want. And I'll give you some more absurd examples.
Okay.
There's a children's book called James and the Great Peach.
Okay, James and the Great Peach.
Right. I'm sure many of our listeners who are parents of young children are familiar with that book. Well, this book was banned in one state because there's a spider who's licking his lips, and that was deemed by the committee as being sexual.
Oh, my goodness.
And then here's one of my favorites, Tarzan.
Tarzan.
Tarzan. We all know Tarzan.
Yeah.
Well, we know that Tarzan and Jane lived together.
Yes.
They weren't married. So that raises a question as to whether that's really appropriate or not. And then There's a children's book called Harriet and the Spy, mm-hmm. and there's a young protagonist in this, and one state ruled that protagonist was too rebellious, and that wouldn't be something that we would want to transmit. Mm. Fahrenheit 451, which, of course, is a book that many of us have read.
Yeah.
Ironically, it's about book burning, ironically. But one of the books that's burned in this particular story is the Bible. Mm. And so a very conservative religious group indicated that they wanted to ban that book. And then finally, there's a few books that, well, actually more than a few books out there, children's books, where animals are talking.
Uh-huh.
There's a group that thinks that's really inappropriate because it places humans at the same level as animals. Oh. And so we should take that off the list.
Oh, my goodness.
So it's pretty amazing. Up for House review, and we'll see where it goes. But I am fairly confident in a not a positive way that this thing's going to pass and that we're going to have a real quagmire of situation where we don't know what thing's going to happen with books that are on library shelves.
Is this a bill the governor could veto?
I think the governor can always bring something up to that particular status. I guess that's possible.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. We'll take a break right here. More with Dr. Robert Hendricks on the Buckmaster Show. Take a break. Be right back.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rialto River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
back. It is the Buckmaster Show, and the green thing is Zocalo Village Studio. Start your planning now. It'd be a great time to get away to Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. New Mexico is especially lovely this time of year in the autumn. It's only about a three-hour drive. You can start your planning, and I hope you do, by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. Find out what to do. Lots to do, like hiking in the Gila National Wilderness, some great places to stay as well over in Silver City and Grant County, New Mexico. Our contributor on education, Dr. Robert Hendricks, is with us, the former superintendent at Flowing Wells School District. We had a very interesting first segment with Dr. Hendricks talking about, and he was articulating for us some of the books that are being banned around the United States by particular states, and books like The Diary of Anne Frank. Kind of surprising, not kind of, very surprising, at least to me. Anyway, this whole, politics has entered into the educational realm like nothing, Bob, that you've probably ever seen in your long career in education.
And I was prompted, Bill, the other day, I was reading an article by George Will, who reminded us that it's the 40th anniversary of the Nation at Risk education report, which was initiated by Secretary Ted Bell. And it was probably the most comprehensive, sweeping report that ever came out of the White House, taking a look at education and talking about what they called the rising tide of mediocrity. And so the question is, where are we 40 years from now, from then?
Have we made any progress, or maybe we've gone backwards?
I don't think we've fared very well.
No.
And I think there's a lot of finger pointing, and I think we can expect that to be certainly realized during this election cycle, because we're going to hear both parties give their version of what they think education progress looks like. But it's really kind of a sad commentary. And, I was thinking a lot about what some of those reasons might be. And I think some of them are very easy for me to look at. I had an opportunity over three presidential administrations to work on the Blue Ribbon Schools Project, where we had a chance to travel around the country and look at exemplary schools. I was thinking back on, what made those schools exemplary? And all of it had to do with rising to the occasion and raising very high expectations for students. I'm not sure that is an example that's set, in a lot of schools today. Although, if you look at the Gallup poll about parental satisfaction of schools, 85% of parents are generally very satisfied with their school.
Really?
They're not satisfied with other schools.
But for their school?
With their school.
And that could be a public or a private school?
It could be.
Yeah.
It's actually both.
Okay.
And I think part of it is because parents have a perspective from that school as to how that school is relating to their children, what the programs look like, who the teachers are, what the administration is, the quality of the school district. So if it's your school, you're very favorable about it. But if it's, some other school in the abstract, another school district, maybe even in another state, you don't have as positive feeling about it. But the National Assessment of Educational Progress reports that educational decline, academic decline, was happening long before the pandemic. And so I think it's kind of easy to say, well, the pandemic caused
a
lot of this.
But it was already on the downhill.
Right. If you go back and look at the statistics, if you track them over the years, we really have never risen to the ranks that we expected to do. And, what the Blue Ribbons Commission said was, you've got to get scores up. Of course, they always use the international comparisons, which I think in some ways are a little bit unfair because you're looking at different a different demographic cycle. You're looking at a different cultural expectation. But nevertheless, you can't argue about Scandinavian countries. You can't argue about Germany. You can't even argue about China when it comes to high academic standards. So what's the issue? Well, I think there's a lot of issues. And one of them, as I see, is that schools are faced a challenge of entertaining students. Their children are not being schooled in the traditional sense because it's a challenge to teachers to kind of meet that schedule of technology, the entertainment cycle. And so,
well, they're competing with the kids on their devices.
They are. Oftentimes, we've talked about before.
And I think the devices should be left in the locker. They ought to put the darn devices in their lockers and no devices during the school day. That's my opinion.
That is not difficult to do, Bill. It's not difficult to do. Now, why is it not happening? I think there's just a lot of pushback. Maybe some teachers just don't want to deal with the resistance of that. But I absolutely agree with you. That should happen. Also, I think competing schedules in today's society are really, really difficult. I was talking to a pastor the other day that said, you know, we're not seeing kids coming to church on Sunday. And she made an interesting point. She said, it's not necessarily they don't want to come to church. It's that they've got athletic schedules on that day. And they've got other extracurricular activities. I mean, a child's schedule is really packed full of activities.
So Sunday morning, instead of like back in the old days, we'd go to church and we'd go to church school on Sunday. But now the kids have soccer games.
You have a soccer tournament. Exactly. And I think
Sunday school was the word I was looking for.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's fair to say that not all parents are very engaged in the school. You know, they're engaged when something goes wrong. But if things are not going wrong, they're pretty satisfied with things. And I would like to see more parental engagement. I think there's no question that parents who are involved in their child's schooling has a very positive effect on the child's achievement. I mean, the study after study shows that. Another thing I think is we're kind of in this mode of traditional teaching, which quite honestly is very unimaginative. I think it's uninspiring. Sometimes it's irrelevant. And I can tell you by visiting classrooms, sometimes it's just plain boring.
With just the teacher standing up there for 50 minutes.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
Or if they're too tired, they sit down.
They sit down and teach.
But there is some of that. I don't want to generalize that that's all teachers, but there are those teachers in the classroom. And so there's a lot of problems. And I'm not sure how we break through the cultural mold to involve parents more, involve students more, because it's got to be a partnership. It's got to be a partnership with schools. And again, the schools where I think are the most successful, are most effective, whether it's a regular traditional school or a charter school or a private school or sectarian school, the schools that are most effective are the ones who have active students and active parents who all on the same page and want the best education for their children.
All right, Dr. Robert Hendricks, always a pleasure. Thank you, Bob. And some of these things that you bring up are not going to be solved overnight.
They
have been solved in 40 years. So there you go. All right, that's going to do it for the Buckmaster Show. On behalf of Dr. Hendricks, Bill Buckmaster, hoping that you will join us tomorrow on the Buckmaster Show. We'll be talking with the former Arizona Health Director, Will Humble. Always has some very interesting things to say, and part of his remarks tomorrow will be about all these vaccinations that are now available to folks, whether it be the flu, the respiratory vaccine, or the COVID vaccine. Should you take all three? Do you take them together? Some folks want to take it like maybe do all three. I don't know. I wouldn't want to do that. I got a flu shot. I'll do that separately, and I'll do the COVID shot separately. But it's up to everybody to make that decision. All right. Buckmaster saying thanks for joining us. Be well, everybody.